This is the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. This portion of the show brought to you by Window World, the number one replacement company in the window company in the United States, the original $189 window company, online at windowworldst.louis.com. I am Paul Harris. Dan Strauss and Ian Geis are here with me, and Colin Jeffrey joins us now for the showbiz segment of the show, where we talk about stuff that's new at the movie theaters and on TV and streaming and all the rest. Hi, Colin. How are you?
Doing well. How are you, Paul?
I'm doing fine. We were off last week, so we have a couple of pictures to catch up on that we didn't get a chance to review. That was while Colin was with his family at Disney World and had a great time down there, right?
Yes, I did. It was a lot of
fun. Your little girl was just excited all the time, right?
Yeah. Like up 16 hours a day and fine. Great. Good to go.
Did she crash when you got home? Or yeah. On the car on the way home?
As soon as we got, she was awake the whole plane ride home.
Oh, plane.
As soon as we got in the car driving home, passed out.
That's it.
Done.
I'm done. All right. Opening up at the theaters this weekend is a movie called Deepwater Horizon, which I got to see a press screening of on Tuesday night. Deepwater Horizon was the name of the offshore oil rig that had the disaster on April 20th, 2010, that led to the death of 11 members of the crew and the biggest oil spill in American history, the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. This movie stars Mark Wahlberg and Kurt Russell and John Malkovich and Gina Rodriguez. It was directed by Peter Berg, who has done some good things, including the movie and TV versions of Friday Night Lights, and done some not so great things like the big screen version of the Milton Bradley game Battleship. A board game turned into, it's one thing when a video game gets turned into a new movie, there's a visual element, but Battleship, it was an hour and a half of this. B4, miss. C9, you sunk my battleship. And that's the end of the movie.
It was worse than that.
Spoiler alert, that's the movie. It is worse than that, actually.
It was worse than that. That would have been an improvement.
I watched about a half hour of it on cable just to see how bad it was.
Connect 4, the movie.
I just saw a preview for Cribbage coming in 2018.
Get out of here.
Yeah, no, that's not happening.
Now, a couple of years ago, Peter Berg made a movie with Mark Wahlberg called Lone Survivor. You know, we talk about bad movies. Movies with bad titles because they do not tell you what the movie is about.
Right.
The biggest example this year was Captain Fantastic, which we've talked about many, many times, was Viggo Mortensen. Terrific movie that people did not go see because they thought it was going to be a superhero movie, and it's not. Lone Survivor was a bad title in the other way, in the fact that it tells you that only one person is going to survive from this military mission, and because Mark Wahlberg is the star of the movie, you can be pretty sure he's going to be the lone survivor.
Spoiler alert, in the title.
In the title, yeah. Don't the trailers don't give it away. You don't have to see the trailer. That's the movie, Lone Survivor. Well, in this case, Peter Berg, the director, shows off his action directing skills again. And they tried to get permission from a couple of the companies that own real-life deep water oil rigs to allow them to go there and film some of the scenes from the movie on them. Not surprisingly, BP and the other oil companies said, you're not setting one foot on one of our rigs. Mm-hmm. You are not allowed to do this. So get this. Peter Berg and the production team built to 80% scale one of these football length wide, 850 feet high oil rigs. So that when you see that in the movie, you're not seeing green screen special effects. It's actually the set of the movie that they built in a giant water tank. And I was shocked when I heard about this, and then when I saw it on the screen, I said, that is really effective. You do not get to see that much effort put into the physical operation in the CGI era. You usually see, okay, we'll just add that in by computer later on. Why would we have to build that? We can build it in a computer, and we don't have to actually have the actors standing around that. But in this movie, they are standing around on that rig. That part is impressive. And when the rig blows up, it's also impressive. The problem with this movie is there isn't really any drama. Kind of like in Lone Survivor, mm-hmm. where you know what's going to happen in the end. Well, this is another movie where you know what happens in the end. The oil spill, 11 people die, etc. Now, it may seem silly to criticize that in this movie, when just a few weeks ago I was praising the movie Sully, in which we also knew what happened in the end. But at least in that one, there is the drama of him and his co-pilot, Jeff Skiles, being dragged before the NTSB for hearings to determine did they do the right or wrong thing in the cockpit. That's the drama that's in that movie. In this movie, the only drama is, can you get out of the way of the exploding stuff and get off the rig and not die? And it's not quite enough drama for me. Now, I will tell you that if you watch this movie, you are going to come to the conclusion that BP was the bad guy. And I don't know whether they were or they weren't. I know that they ended up paying tens of billions of dollars in fines and cleanup costs and all of that sort of stuff. And I'm no fan of any big oil company. But I will tell you that John Malkovich, as the lead BP guy on the rig, plays his guy in pure John Malkovich evil form. And he does it with a Louisiana Cajun accent that is almost as thick as his Russian accent was in Rounders.
Wow.
In fact, at the beginning, when he first started talking, I thought, that's not really John Malkovich, is it? Malkovich would do this better than that. Nope, it's Malkovich. Wow. He's doing it, and it immediately becomes, every time he talks, you think to yourself, this is Malkovich doing a parody of Malkovich doing a parody of Malkovich.
Yep.
It's that thick and that deep. I will tell you that Mark Wahlberg, solid as the lead guy. Kurt Russell, solid as the guy who's in charge on board the rig. Gina Rodriguez is a woman who works in the control room on board there. They play the three heroes of the piece. They're all very, very solid. But it's confusing. We know what happens, but we don't quite know what's happening during the movie. You know what I mean by mm-hmm. that?
Yeah.
We know what's going to happen in the end. We know it's going to blow up. We know people are going to die. We know what's going to happen. But while it's going on, Berg, the director, shows you stuff bubbling and rumbling underwater. He shows you the pipe. It's shaking a little bit. They use terminology that if you worked on an oil rig, you'd probably understand, but I don't, so I didn't. So you're not really clear what's happening. And when I say it looks like they're blaming BP for everything, I'm not sure, based on what I saw in this movie, what went wrong and who's to blame, except that BP was upset that this thing was 43 days behind schedule and they were losing millions of dollars because they hadn't found the oil yet.
Halliburton was involved in creating the backfill, weren't they?
I don't remember. Transocean was the company that was actually running the rig for BP, and these are all Transocean yeah. employees.
And I believe Halliburton was supposed to create the stuff that would drop in if there was something that went wrong. Halliburton was creating like the cement backfill, they call it. It's like a slurry of just, it's literally garbage they pump into the hole, but they didn't test it or something.
Yeah, well, and that's part of it. But yeah. that part of it is very difficult to understand in mm-hmm. this movie. Also, this movie doesn't have anything about the environmental effects of the spill, because it ends once they get everybody but 11 men safely off of there. So you don't get the environmental effects of it. You don't get the economic effects of the businesses on the Gulf Coast, many of which were hurt for a generation. You know, a lot of those people who worked, fishermen down there, their businesses were ruined for a generation down there. At the end, you see a few slides of the men who died and the BP executives who were charged with manslaughter, and then eventually those charges were dropped. There's also the Kate Hudson role of disaster guy's wife. I talked about Sully.
Yes.
In that movie,
at home,
Tom,
Laura Linney.
Tom Hanks plays Sully. Laura Linney plays his wife, the woman on the phone who has to talk to her husband who's involved in the disaster. Or another example, Sienna Miller, my Mississippi Grind co-star, Chris Kyle's wife in American Sniper, and her entire job was to be on the phone as the wife who's worried about what's happening to her husband. Well, in this movie, that role is played by Kate Hudson, who's cute, and she's still very Kate Hudson-like. And the whole time you're watching her, you're thinking, there's no need for you to be in this movie. We don't need to see you at home worried about this. Let's get back to the rig where mm-hmm. the action is. I did learn one thing from this movie that I did not know, because I know nothing about how oil rigs work. Did you know that when they drill down into the earth and they put that giant pipe down there to get the oil from underneath the bottom of the sea, that they don't have to pump the oil up.
The pressure does it, doesn't it?
Correct.
Yeah, it's under enormous pressure, and that was so deep that that was part of the problem.
They had to drill
13,000 feet.
They had to drill a mile down just to get to the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
So that's just a mile of water they have to go through. That's not really drilling. They're just putting the pipe down a mile.
Like straw.
And then they get to the bottom, and they drill 2 more miles into the earth to get down there, and then they get to where the oil is, and I just thought the oil was kind of sitting down there. I didn't know it was percolating, thinking, I can't wait to get out of the earth.
Didn't you see the Beverly Hillbillies? The beginning, when Jed went shooting at some food, and all of a sudden it started...
It didn't gush 750 feet up into the air. Yeah, it bubbled, exactly. Yeah. I thought it bubbled exactly like that.
Yeah.
In this movie, we learn, no, it comes shooting up, and that I guess that's the cliche of the oil well, with the oil coming out the top. I thought that was because they were pumping it up. What do I know? In the end, I'm giving this movie, Deepwater Horizon, a 6 out of 10. The action is fine. The direction is fine, although the discussion of what they're doing is a little confusing. The acting is all fine, but it's not a great movie. It's an okay movie. And when you go in there, you're probably going to already know what happens. And when you walk out, you'll go, all right, let's get dinner. It's one of those kind of movies.
These two are teaming up, Mark Wahlberg and Peter Berg, later this year for Patriots Day.
What's
the story of the Boston Marathon bombing?
Hmm.
These two, back together.
Okay.
Back at it. I'm just telling you. So if you go see this weekend, you're like, oh, I loved it. Well, you only have to wait like a month and a half. And then they're back together.
They'll get another one.
Another one.
All right, there's my review of Deepwater Horizon, which opens up today all around St. Louis. Now, at the other end of the movie spectrum, the not-so-dramatic Masterminds. And I know nothing about this movie other than it has Zach Galifianakis and Kristen Wiig in it.
And it has more people than that. It has a very impressive cast. Kate McKinnon is in it. I think she's funny. Jason Sudeikis, Owen Wilson, Leslie Jones. If you're starting to say, oh, these are a lot of the same SNL people,
yeah,
there's a reason for that.
Produced by Lorne Michaels.
No, in 2014, they sat down and said, let's make a movie about the Loomis armored car robbery. And they did it. And they signed Jim Carrey, and they cast a bunch of SNL people, and they said, oh, this is going to be really good. But then Jim Carrey said, I don't want anything to do with this. So then they said, oh, let's bring Zach Galifianakis in. And they started filming in 2014. You know what makes a comedy really good? 2 years of thinking about it.
Yeah.
Especially a dumb comedy. This centers around a real-life event, one of the largest cash robberies in the history of the U.S., Zach Galifianakis and Kristen Wiig open up, and they work for Loomis Armored Car Service. And you've seen them. They've got a real fancy script. You've seen a Loomis car, more than like armored car, driving around somewhere. And Kristen Wiig quits and falls in with the bad crowd. That's Owen Wilson, who plays the brains of the operation. And brains.
In quote.
Yes.
Yes. Well, you told us it was Owen Wilson.
Yes.
We didn't think Stephen Hawking.
No. Everyone thinks, everyone in this movie thinks they're a mastermind, but they're not. They're really just, they're dumb.
Knuckleheads.
They're jokers. They're not good at this. And they say, hey, you know what? Zach Galifianakis, you should go rob this place. We tell you've got a crush on Kristen Wiig, so we're going to use her. And we're going to prey upon that affection you have for her. You should rob, and after you rob the place, you should go down to Mexico, and we'll send you money down there, and you just hang out down there till the heat's off. Well, of course, that's not what they really mean to have happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just dumb. It's dumb. It's a comedy. They say it's a comedy. I didn't laugh once, and I realize I'm kind of a snob about some comedies. This was bad. This was bad from start to finish. It was poorly executed. Everything about it was bad. I didn't like it at all.
I'll go see it.
It's 8 out of 10. Dan's review next week. I guess if you really like dumb comedies, like these comedies that pretend to be smart, but the characters are all sort of hapless, don't watch a preview for this. Like, if you haven't seen a preview and you're thinking, oh, maybe I should go, don't, because they show the two parts that were like the closest I came to laughing in this movie. And I wanted to like this because I like everyone in the cast. But man, it's just rough. I guess what the thought was is, oh, Jim Carrey dropped out. Zach Galifianakis just was in Hangover 3. I think he could carry a movie. Let's cast him. It was a bad decision. He's a bit player. He can't be the central character in a movie. He's just not funny enough. He's one character, one note. It's like Melissa McCarthy. They just kind of bounce off stuff through a movie and work their way through.
Yeah.
Go buy Fargo on DVD, or go buy In Bruges on DVD, or A Simple Plan. Go buy these movies on DVD. They're caper movies that are kind of dark comedies, but work, and they're actually funny. And In Bruges gives you a chance to see Colin Farrell be really funny in that movie. It's a dark comedy. Don't waste your time with this movie. No, just no. I mean,
so what do you get? Masterminds.
One.
On the scale
this right now is probably one of the worst movies I've seen all year.
Wow.
Okay. It was just, and I may be overly harsh on it. And if you go and see this, and you're like, oh, Colin, you were off base. It's comedy. Different things make us laugh. But I was at the point where there were people laughing around me. I'm like, why are you laughing at this? You've seen this joke 25 times before. This was ripping jokes off of like Big Bang Theory. Like physical comedy. And I'm like, no. It was just rough. It's, you know, watch Fargo.
You mentioned the Saturday Night Live people are in that. Half of those people that you mentioned, I don't think are all that talented.
Kate McKinnon.
I like her a lot.
Kristen Wiig. I think they are both very funny.
I never got into the Kristen Wiig.
My wife hates her. I think they're funny. Jason Sudeikis.
Another guy I don't think is that funny.
But I think he's one of the great straight men. Like, he's funny. He and Jason Bateman have this ability to be the straight man and make everyone else funny, but they're still funny in a scene. He's not that guy. They try to make him a goofy character, a hitman. He plays a hitman. And it goes about as you'd expect.
You know, just because you were on Saturday Night Live for a few years, and by the way, you were on in the years when the show sucked. Just because you were on that show doesn't mean that you're going to be good in a movie. And if anybody continues to prove that, it's Jason Sudeikis. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
Speaking
of Horrible Bosses, he was good in.
Oh, my God.
That was more of an ensemble cast. I mean, Charlie Day is the one who made that movie.
That worked because of Charlie Day, Jennifer Aniston, and Jason Bateman.
Yes, it was definitely a group effort.
No, Charlie Day was the guy with the beard, right?
He was a dental hygienist.
Yes. Yeah.
Speaking of Saturday Night Live, they're starting their new season tomorrow night. Margot Robbie is the host tomorrow night, and Daryl Hammond will not be doing Trump this season.
Can we talk how dumb that was? They had a Donald Trump. They're like,
the perfect Donald Trump.
Let's go get Alec Baldwin.
Yes.
Why is he not going to be doing Trump?
Because they brought on Alec Baldwin.
Because Tina Fey said to Lorne Michaels, hey, you know, Alec does a pretty good Donald Trump. And Lorne Michaels said, oh, that's good. We'll sign him. And
so, Daryl Hammond is getting older. He's getting kind of orange just naturally. These things are happening.
Yes.
And they're like, oh, let's go get Alec Baldwin.
You already have a guy on your cast who can do it.
And I've noticed something else. I've never seen them do this. Ordinarily, as they lead up to a new season, they just say, hey, here's our musical guests and the host.
Yep.
They have been running promos that show Kate McKinnon getting ready to do Hillary.
Yes.
And Alec Baldwin getting ready. And they're like building this up as it's like, here's a sketch.
I think they're building it up way, way, way too
much. Part of what made SNL funny was you had an idea what the cold open was going to be, but you never quite knew what they were going to do. This is like, hey, guys, guess what we're going to do all season?
Yes.
Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. The problem is, in 5 weeks, the joke doesn't work anymore.
And that's a huge mistake because Daryl Hammond does one of the best Trumps.
I agree.
Yeah.
My only guess is they don't want Daryl Hammond doing it because they're going to make Bill Clinton very central to this because Hillary Clinton's there and they're like, oh we can use Daryl Hammond as. But everyone does Bill Clinton. Everyone has a Bill Clinton impersonation. You don't need Daryl Hammond to do it. Have anyone in the world do a Bill Clinton?
You know, I can remember 1992 when it was Clinton versus George H.W. Bush versus Ross Perot.
Oh.
And Phil Hartman was doing Clinton, and he did a great Clinton.
Warlords.
And
McDonald's.
The McDonald's one. But they did a debate with the three of them because there was a presidential debate with all three of them on stage. And so they had Phil Hartman as Clinton, and then Dana Carvey, who did the definitive George H.W. Bush. Not gonna do it. Everybody who ever did that imitation imitates Dana Carvey.
Yes.
That's it. But they also had Dana Carvey doing Ross Perot.
Yes.
And so they had Ross Perot on videotape. And they inserted it, and it was done perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Why couldn't they have done this with Daryl Hammond playing both Trump and Bill Clinton?
I don't know that the video technology is where it...
What?
24 years later? Come on!
They're desperate for ratings. That's all I can think of.
But Alec Baldwin doesn't bring in the ratings for that tomorrow night. No, nobody's going. I was not going to watch SNL, but I heard they got Alec Baldwin to do Trump. Now I have to watch.
I don't know.
Alec Baldwin's funny doing other stuff.
Yes.
On there.
Yes, and he's been on there and has done a lot of good characters.
Yeah, he's hosted it just about the most times of anyone.
If you told me that they were going to do the debate and it was going to be Kate McKinnon as Hillary Clinton and Daryl Hammond as Donald Trump and Alec Baldwin as Lester Holt, now you got a show.
There you go. Yes.
Now you got something. We got to take a break. Back with more showbiz stuff in a moment here on the Big 550 KTRS. On original music, which, by the way, plays over the closing credits. The original theme is there. And what was funny was at the screening I went to of this, people weren't having fantastic reactions to the movie. They were caught up in it, and they were interested in it, and rooting for Denzel and all the other guys. When that theme from the 1960 version played over the end credits, you could feel the energy in the room go up. We're all about to get up and leave, and nobody gets up because we just wanted to hear that song. That's part of the reason you're going to see The Magnificent Seven, was to hear that song.
Why did they not play it at the beginning, then?
I don't know. Why didn't they get a new version of it? You remember when U2 did a new version of the Bond theme a few years ago? And they always have different people doing Bond themes. And that's happened many times with remakes, where you get a contemporary group to do a remake. You could have easily gotten a rock version of The Magnificent Seven done and played it as the intro to this. Antoine Fuqua decided not to do that. Both of the movies, in case you don't know the plot, both of the movies are about gunmen in the Old West who are hired by a bunch of people in a small town to protect them from the bad guys. In the original, the bad guys were Mexican banditos led by Eli Wallach, who overacted with a bad Mexican accent. In the remake, the gunmen are enforcers. The bad guys are the enforcers for a ruthless businessman who's played by Peter Sarsgaard, who tends to underact and does in this, but he has a constant snarl throughout the movie. Denzel, meanwhile, plays the hero, Chisholm, a gunfighter who recruits a multicultural group of defenders at the behest of a woman from this town who hires them. She's played by Haley Bennett. Now, I would not expect you to know who Haley Bennett is unless you saw a 2007 romantic comedy starring Hugh Grant and Drew Barrymore called Music and Lyrics, which I kind of liked. And she plays a Britney Spears-like singer in that, and for the last 9 years has tried to live that down. But now she's the hot property. Remember when Jessica Chastain a few years ago was in every movie Hollywood released for a year?
Mm-hmm.
Haley Bennett is that this fall. She's in this, she's in The Girl on the Train, and she's in Warren Beatty's new movie, Rules Don't Apply, all of which come out between now and New Year's Eve. So when you watch The Magnificent Seven remake, it's fun to see Denzel on a horse. He's dressed all in black. There's one moment where he rides on the screen, and I flashed back to Cleavon Little in Blazing Saddles coming into the Count Basie Orchestra. But he's good. You know, he's Denzel. He's always the authority figure. He's always the guy who everybody looks up to, and he's more than up to the task in this. The rest of the cast is okay. They're not really given anything original to do. One complaint I have about this is a complaint I have about a lot of action directors, which is it's cut too quickly. Antoine Fuqua, the director, cuts the movie so quickly that you don't really get to see the impact of the bloody gunfights that make up the bulk of the movie. After that, there's not much more to say about it. It's a Western. There's a gunfight. If you saw the original, you know how this is going to end. If you didn't see the original, you know how this is going to end. It's a Denzel Washington movie. You think, like in Mark Wahlberg starring in Lone Survivor. You think Mark Wahlberg's going to die? No, he's the Lone Survivor. You think Denzel Washington's going to die in The Magnificent Seven? Spoiler alert, no. He's not going to.
Oh.
The remake pales in comparison to the original, but It's not a bad 2 hours. If you haven't seen the original, you're going to go. You're going to see this. You're going to see a good action Western. I give it a 7 out of 10.
Wow.
It's not a great movie, but it's a good one.
Wow.
Certainly better than Deepwater Horizon.
And it's worth finding, because this is back there. I'd say it's worth finding. Go look for it. They may have it at your library. Seven Samurai, which is what all of these are based off of. Yes. These two movies are based off.
A Japanese movie. Maybe
now,
Kurosawa.
It's 3 hours and 20 minutes long,
yeah,
but it's spectacular.
Well, I didn't like it.
Oh, see, I love that.
But then again, I don't like subtitles.
Okay.
Oh, I hate subtitles.
Yeah.
There's a shock.
Now, I have one other movie that's out there.
Can't read them anyway.
Found something.
Exactly. That's
finally,
the problem.
You found it.
Subtitles, 1 out of 10. Dan Straight.
Yeah.
I do have something else I want to recommend to you, which is not an action movie at all. It's actually a Disney movie, not an animated movie, but it's called The Queen of Katwe. Terrible title again. You see that title, Queen of Katwe, what is that? I don't care, I'm not going. You should go see this movie. Up until now, there's been exactly one great movie about chess, Searching for Bobby Fischer, 1993 drama about a kid named Josh Waitzkin, who was a real-life chess prodigy. He was played by an actor named Max Pomeranz. His parents were played by Joe Mantegna and Joan Allen. His teachers were Ben Kingsley and Lawrence Fishburne. It's a great movie, Searching for Bobby Fischer.
Ian likes movies about searching for chess.
Oh, my gosh.
You can get that on udan.com.
Hello, everybody.
Now there's a new chess movie called Queen of Katwe about another real-life person who, as a kid, showed some prowess at this game. Her name is Fiona Mutesi. She's a girl from a very poor village in Uganda called Katwe, which is how the movie gets its title. She develops an extraordinary talent for chess after she's coached by a guy, real-life guy by the name of Robert Katende, who's played in the movie by David Oyelowo, who should have gotten an Oscar for playing Martin Luther King in Selma. He introduces her and a bunch of the other girls and boys in this little village to it, and it becomes apparent very quickly that she's brilliant at this game. What's amazing is she can't read, because she comes from a poor, slum-ridden family with a mom who's played by, speaking of the Oscars, Lupita Nyong'o, who won an Oscar for her role in 12 Years a Slave. They're so poor that they can literally not keep a roof over their heads in this small town, where a good job is selling corn by the side of the road in the marketplace. Her daughters have no future in this town unless they take up with a man with money, as Fiona's sister Knight does. But with the chess coach's urging and his clever politicking with the chess authorities, Fiona grows from a child of the slums to a teenager with a talent that can help her rise above the surroundings. It's a very inspirational movie in that way. It is a very colorful movie in that it has the Disney palette of colors playing throughout it. It's directed by a woman named Mira Nair. The good news I have for you is it does not fall into the Disney underdog wins in the end cliches. You are rooting for Fiona and for other characters in this movie, and you get great performances from Medina Nalwanga, the little girl who plays Fiona in this movie, and from David Oyelowo, and from Lupita Nyong'o. They're all very, very good, and it's also a wonderful family movie. I think you should take your daughter to see this movie.
Okay.
Even if she doesn't play chess, even if you don't understand chess, neither do some of the kids in the movie, but they're taught. And the inspirational aspects of this movie are absolutely wonderful. And it'll be nice to see it inspire more kids of color and a Caucasian kid or two as well to take up chess and learn its strategies and its disciplines and understand how to plan ahead in the game and in life. It is a wonderful movie, Queen of Katwe. Look for it. It's been out about a week now, and it's doing okay for a small movie. I give it an 8 out of 10.
Wow.
Of all the movies we've discussed this week, it's my favorite.
That's good.
What else you got today?
At the end of the year here, we will start to get some DVDs, some screeners for movies that we may not have seen, just so we can make certain we review everything by the end of the year. Mm-hmm. That's the idea. So we get a bunch of these. We never loan them out, and there's a reason for that. A gentleman last year got a copy. He worked for a company and got a screening disc for The Revenant. Well, big dumb, he went and put it on the internet for people to download.
Ugh.
His sentence was just handed down. 8 months home confinement.
Whoa.
Not great. $1.2 million fine.
Wow.
$1.2 million
fine. Let me just go back to the 8 months of home confinement. So you've been convicted of pirating movies. You're going to be forced to stay home and watch Netflix and Amazon and Hulu and watch movies and download them and make copies for yourself.
But it didn't just get... That's a horrible thing to do. You know, don't do it. It's bad. But this weekend, as a result of that, I'm going to go watch Rear Window because it makes me think of home confinement. So it's not all bad there. The Purge, which is now in its third movie and there's plans for a fourth, is getting a TV series.
Okay.
It might work because it can explore, like, what the... Purge is, but yeah, they're planning to do a TV series.
Speaking of TV series, have you watched Designated Survivor? Anybody?
Watched the first episode.
The new Kiefer Sutherland show?
I watched the just watched it this past.
I'm in love with this show. This is going to be the best guilty pleasure dumb entertainment stuff.
I agree.
Wednesday night.
Yeah, it's on Wednesday nights on ABC. I watched the first two episodes. I liked them.
I thought it was pretty good.
Although I do have one objection to it, which is that in the first episode, the Designated Survivor is a thing where when the president gives the State of the Union address. He's at the Capitol building. The vice president's there. The whole cabinet is there. The whole Supreme Court is there. All of Congress is there. And they always have one cabinet member who's, quote, the designated survivor, who's not there, so that if something happens and the Capitol blows up, that person will go in the line of succession and become president. Mm-hmm. You may remember that my brother, Seth, for a while was the acting Secretary of Labor, which put him 11th in that order. Mm-hmm. And when he got to go to the State of the Union, I said, so you're not going to be the designated survivor? He said, no, I'm not, and I don't want to. Because I'll tell you right now, if you ever turn your TV on and you see me sitting in the Oval Office telling you that everything is okay, everything's not okay. Well, that's the plot of this. And Kiefer Sutherland plays the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, who is the designated survivor. The Capitol is blown up, and he becomes president of the United States. And at the end of the first episode, he's about to address the country, and his assistant says to him, or maybe it's his chief of staff, says, sir, your glasses, you need to take your glasses off. They're not presidential. And I thought, what the hell?
I know.
I'm a middle-aged guy. I wear glasses. Ian, you're not a middle-aged guy, but you wear glasses.
Right. They're not presidential.
Not presidential. Yeah. Take them off. And then the second episode, he's going to go to the Capitol and review the rubble.
Yeah.
And on the way there, somebody mentions the glasses. And again, he takes them off.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. As a middle-aged guy who has to wear glasses, I don't wear them just because I think they look good on me. I know they don't. I need them. If I had to walk out anywhere without my glasses on, I'm going to trip and fall. Why would you want the president to do that?
It's kind of an important thing. Okay, this one button here gives everyone in America a hamburger. This other one launches a nuclear warhead. Where are my glasses? I don't know.
But at this
press
point,
the right button.
At this point, no one's listening to him anyway, with his glasses or without his glasses.
That's true. I like the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked it too.
It's such great guilty entertainment.
I'll tell you something else that may become a guilty pleasure for me. Westworld.
I'm looking forward to that too.
It debuts on HBO this Sunday night, based on the old Michael Crichton novel, which became a movie starring Yul Brynner as the gunfighter. We're bringing it all right back again because I started with Yul Brynner in The Magnificent Seven, and now we're back to the makeup.
Anthony Hopkins. I'm very much looking forward to that.
I am as well. So there's our showbiz stuff for this week. Colin's got the news here at the top of the hour, and then next hour I will have the Harris Challenge and Knuckleheads in the News for you here on the Big 550 KTRS.